Good evening, America, and good afternoon for the majority of Australians watching today. Hello, everyone who's listening live on YouTube, LinkedIn, and Facebook. You're listening to Tony Lontis with her co-host Lisa Coletta on Radio Tony Everyday Business. Just a quick reminder that you can jump onto YouTube and see all the pre-shows. You can find out all the information about our co-hosts, all the links to my amazing co-hosts' information you can find on radiotony.com under co-hosts. We love to hear from you. We love to hear what's happening in your world. So please drop us a line and email. If you want to connect with Lisa, don't forget to use the email support@governancecollective.com. That's support@governancecollective.com or info@radiotony.com, info@radiotony.com. Now, before the show, Lisa and I were discussing that today in Australia, it's the 11th of the 11th, 2020. And for those of us that are spiritually inclined, it's a big milestone today. And Lisa and I were discussing that feeling of heavy energy just sitting in and around. And for those of you non-believers out there, I've had a week where my website's crashed. I've lost all my emails. I've had lots of little technical issues. No matter how hard I try, no matter what I do to prevent those things, they still keep happening. And it's Wednesday midweek and I've just gone, okay, universe, bring it on. I'll just go with the flow. And so I'm wondering, I'm also watching a lot of the traditional media out there, and there's lots of stuff happening across the world. And in particular, lots of us have been glued to what's happening in America. And again, I feel pretty heartsick for the way in which the leaders of your country are behaving. And I feel sad about that. And I'm waiting and hoping that someone with some heart-centered leadership will step up, make a great speech about bringing you all together and moving forward, something that we haven't heard before, because I think that's what it's going to take. The other thing is that I've been having lots of conversations about traditional media versus non-traditional media. And of course, if you're listening to BBS Radio, we are non-traditional media. And can I tell you that the predictions for non-traditional media in the future are massive? And your support of non-traditional media is important because it will give you an alternate view to what's being put in front of you all the time and constantly across print, radio, and TV media. And I encourage you, if not this station, jump on the other stations all across the world that'll give you an alternate view. And so I want to get on with the show today. And before I do, I just want to remind you that Lisa's company, The Governance Collective, is a powerful company working with CEOs, chairs, corporations, committees, managing directors in the public and private sector. And the work she does is incredibly important. She loves to work with leaders who want to lead in a way that is more heart-centered. And if ever there's a time to move into 2021 and start your corporation moving in that direction, I encourage you to get in contact with Lisa. This is important work with important timing. If you don't start doing some of this work, you will be left behind, because as humanity raises its consciousness and understanding, you need to be there and understanding this. So Lisa, our conversation around heart-centered leadership continues. And last week we talked about related party transactions, conflicts of interest, ethics and boundaries. And this week we want to continue along that track of heart-centered leadership, but we want to talk about hard conversations. And leading into this discussion, I want to say that even world leaders of amazingly big democratic societies someone needs to be having hard conversations with those leaders. And so Lisa and I want to talk about some of those hard conversations, which include not only having those tough discussions, but with staff that are underperforming or the delivery of substandard work, etc. So Lisa, I know you've got a particular story that's important around this. So let's start the program with that and move on.
Oh, hello there, Tony. Hello, listeners. So yes, a lot going on around us at the moment. And I think we've all, Tony, been around leaders that have somehow become leaders in a way that you might be shaking your head and wondering how they even got to where they are. How did they get into this role? Who actually thought that this individual had leadership capabilities that would enable the business, you know, to be able to move forward? We've had those experiences, all of us. But when we talked, you know, offline earlier in the week around the tone of the show today, I really recall a leader that I had a couple of years ago, who female leader, who was, I guess it's fair to say, never really received any feedback around behaviours in the past, and was very used to playing the boy game and not the girl game. So in other words, her behaviour was modelled and mimicked on how the other males in her in the environments that she worked in actually behaved. However, having a female leader behave in male ways was very, very disorienting for her team members. And it just so happened that I was actually hired by her into a new organisation, and she was able to choose her own team because it was a new division within the business that we were operating in. And this leader, I've got to tell you, had a really, really tough time, Tony. And the reason why she did was because people couldn't relate to her in the way that other leaders were relatable, because, as I said, she was behaving in a way that was very, very masculine, very male. And we all know that there are different standards, I guess is the best way to describe it, around how males behave and how females behave. You know, little examples. If, you know, your male boss doesn't say good morning to you in the morning, you don't really think very much of it. But you sort of have an expectation that you'd say good morning to your female leader and she'd say good morning back. If the male's had a bad morning or whatever, you know, he'd keep his door closed and you wouldn't think much of it. Whereas with female leaders, you know, your expectations are a little bit different. In this particular case, I think it's fair to say that because this particular leader was actually, it was a new level of the organisation that this woman was working in as well, she really had a hard time, Tony, because she just behaved the way that was always acceptable to her in the other environments that she was in. What she didn't recognise, though, was that the lines around behaviours and values in the organisation she stepped into was different. And as part of that, we actually needed to undertake 360-degree surveys on ourselves and on her as well. And I'm not sure if you've been involved in processes like that before, where you actually did those 360-degree surveys. And typically they're actually run across the organisation as well as above and below. So she had her commenting on her behaviour. She had a leader above her commenting on her behaviour. And she had us, her executive team, commenting on her behaviour as well. It was, and of course, vice versa, she was actually also doing the same with us. Interestingly, from a feedback standpoint, myself and my peers' feedback was very, very complimentary from everyone except her. And it was quite, I guess, baffling. We all had different types of relationships with her, some a little bit more cordial than others. She was quite argumentative, very ego-driven, not very much self-awareness at all. And I think that that was probably one of the key things that we found it most hard to sort of get our heads around, how a female didn't have that emotional intelligence and self-awareness to really understand that her behaviour was impacting people. So the result of these surveys, she actually got quite poor results from every direction, across, above and down. And we ended up having to have a team offsite to actually work through the results. And I'm sure you can imagine that this offsite was the most, it was described by some of my peers as the most traumatic experience that they've ever had in their entire life, because we actually had to sit down and give her real feedback around what was going on and what wasn't, and how it made us feel, so that she could actually come to terms with the realities of the behaviours that she was dishing out to others.
Lisa, I can't imagine being in that situation where my behaviours had completely affected a team to such an extent that we had to have an off-site conversation. So, number one, how did people around her prepare her for that process? And what was it like? I know what it would be like to be in that room, really traumatically uncomfortable. But how did she go with that? Like, were there tears and tantrums? Like,
look, it was traumatic. There was a lot of tears. And the way that the organization chose to handle this particular dynamic and conversation was very, very heart-centered, even though she was one of the leaders, and we talked about this before, Tony, egocentric leaders typically don't feel they need support. And so she was pushing quite heavily back on, obtaining any support from anyone. However, they actually hired an executive coach for her to support her through this process. And it was the executive herself who decided that the best way the team would be able to move forward effectively was to actually come together, of make amends and move forward on that basis. The two-day offsite, I think it's fair to say, was I think it was a really different experience for everyone there, each of my peers and myself. For me personally, I took it as an opportunity for her and I to be able to draw a clean line, say what we need to say and, agree to be able to move forward together in a way that actually was more effective, because I actually found within myself, because I had a decent level of self-awareness, that I wasn't giving her the best version of me either. And so what I was doing was that she was triggering me, and instead of responding in a heart-centered way, I was reacting. And at the beginning, I was responding really effectively, but over time I got worn down to the point where I was actually playing the same game she was. And I knew that that behavior wasn't acceptable. It's not my true self. And it's also not sustainable from a relationship standpoint. And it wasn't bringing the organization forward towards the goals that the organization needed to achieve. And I was concerned that the role that I was in, and I was working in a very, very senior role that was quite high profile, that this type of relationship wasn't going to be sustainable for her or for myself, and it was going to start getting in the way of a lot of other, outcomes and productivity as well. So I ended that conversation knowing that I needed to own some of my own stuff, Tony, and I did. So, when it was my turn and we had to go around the room and talk about, our experience and what we'd like to see moving forward, I chose to actually extend the olive branch and say, look, I know that my behaviour hasn't been great either, so I'm not going to stand here and say that it's all her fault. It's also mine. I would love the opportunity to be able to draw the line and use this two-day offsite to be able to draw a line and go, let's say what we need to say and let's move forward, knowing that we both want better for ourselves and for each other. And I'm really pleased that we were able to do that, and I'm actually still in contact with her now, even though I've moved on from that particular organization. Unfortunately, some of the other team members didn't quite get there. There was some individuals that wanted to resign following the conversation. It's actually quite confrontational to have that real conversation as well, Tony, especially when heart-centered leaders are used to, they really want to. Great heart-centered governing leaders want to have win-win conversations. They want to have real, authentic conversations. And when the person on the other side of the table isn't giving them their true self, they're giving their ego self, it can be really, really difficult and challenging. There's quite a few techniques that we've found that support heart-centered governing leaders in having these conversations as well. It's one of those things, I think, like many that you just kind of hold, you just hang on to in the back of your mind and go, I remember when, and these were the
Yes.
learnings from that experience.
I thought that I'd do something a little different this morning. And I'm actually thinking about the American leadership at the moment. And I'd actually like to pretend that we had a heart-centered leader that could take the incumbent president into a two-day offset, and what that would look like, and how you would manage that ego. What do you
Oh,
reckon? Is that doable?
I think it's definitely doable. I think
Yeah.
there'd probably be some golf involved, I'd imagine. A lot of the conversation may need to be on the golf course, I'd imagine.
Yes.
One of the key things that I find most effective when having these types of heart-centered, real conversations is making
Yeah.
sure the mood in the room is right. The term mood in the room is
So
not
that
my.
would definitely be golf, wouldn't it? So that would be
Would
placing him in a place where he feels really comfortable and it's enjoyable.
comfortable,
And it would be
enjoy.
taking the team and having, yeah.
Absolutely, but it has to be something that's relatable for everyone. And sometimes that can be quite hard when you've got a rather large team, or whether you've got a team of individuals who are very, very different in what safe means to them, if you know what I mean. But if
Yes.
we're actually if we're talking about an exiting president and an incoming president-elect,
Yes.
I think probably. There'd be a couple of things, I guess, that
Yeah.
I would recommend. The first thing that we do know, Tony, is that hearts speak to hearts, and
Yes.
acknowledging how the outgoing president may be really feeling right now would be really, really
Yeah.
important.
Yeah.
Recognizing, calling it in a way that recognizes that it isn't us judging you for feeling that way. It's actually us, really acknowledging that, you are disappointed. You are feeling
Yes.
hurt, and you might be feeling betrayed, and you might be feeling that it's unfair, and you might be feeling all of these things. And actually acknowledging that perhaps if you were in his position, you might actually be feeling the same way.
Yes. Yes.
And having that level of empathy and recognizing that, if I was in the same position you were in, I might be feeling that way too. It doesn't change the outcome. We're not changing the outcome.
No.
We can't change the outcome. The outcome is the outcome. But the other things I would be talking about is what is actually working now.
Yeah.
Because is everything not working now? One of the things that
I'm sure that there are things that are really working quite well. So that's where you would start the conversation.
Look,
Lisa,
I.
what about some of the bad behavior that is surrounding him? How would you, as a heart-centered leader, manage those conversations so that they were on board with the whole conversation and transition?
Yeah, look, good. That's a really good question. I find that the behaviour you walk past is the behaviour you accept. So at some point
Yes.
in time, the US president has accepted the behaviour around him. In fact, it may actually be mirroring his own behaviour. So
Yes.
in that 2 day off, yeah. So in the 2 day offside, I think I'd be breaking down the conversation to recognise. And recognize, how he's feeling right now, what is actually working right now, what we are actually going to continue with, and what we actually
Yes.
and what it is that we actually have to do together to be able to move the country forward. And so
Yes.
moving the country forward includes, the president actually drawing some new clean lines with his administration around what is
Yes.
acceptable and what's unacceptable behavior. What is it that he's going to do to ensure the best transition possible for
Yeah.
the people, for the collective of
Of
the
the
country?
American people.
Exactly, for the collective, not for me, not for my party, not for my family, not for, whatever it is that I've got cooking in the background. What's actually in the best
Yeah.
interest of everyone involved? I think it's one of those things too, Tony, where again, the president may actually need to acknowledge the achievements and the work that has been undertaken and actually
Yes.
communicate what work is going to continue with the new administration. Because
Yes.
one of the things that I've personally found, you know, and as you said during the intro, all of us have been watching, you know, really carefully around what's occurring with the US in the election. And I personally have two different minds around the president, that's the outgoing president at the moment. The first
Yes.
thing I do know is that I personally don't really like behavior, the behaviors that are being exhibited. I don't believe
Agreed.
right behaviors. I can't get past the behavior to know whether or not he's got any good policy. And
Yes.
I know that he has got some policy that I don't agree with. There has been quite a lot of media around the stuff that's not great. Here in
Yes.
Australia, I don't actually know that we've heard very much about any good policy, but I also know
No.
of individuals here in Australia who go, you know what, he's doing X, Y, and Z, and that's actually a pretty good thing. I haven't
Yeah.
been able to get past that behavior. And so
I'm with
once
you there. I that behavior is so toxic and so triggering from my perspective about ego driven white male masculinity that it's incredibly difficult for me to look past the behavior. But I know from talking to Americans all the time that there is some good stuff there, and I wish that we were, I wish that was promoted more so that we could see, okay, so these are the good things, and the focus on the good things, and then come back and go, okay, well, we're not going to get rid of that good stuff that you've done, but here's what we want to do with it going forward.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing too is what would be a really great look for an incoming president is to separate out the issues of people versus process and policy. So
Yes.
we don't actually need to beat up our opponents anymore because he's already won the race. And so
Yeah.
leveraging and enabling and moving forward on some of the great stuff that's already been set in motion is actually very complementary to the outgoing president. It's actually,
Yes.
especially if the matter or the actual policy area is in the best interests of the people, let's not throw the baby
Yes.
out with the bathwater, but let's also acknowledge
Correct.
the outgoing president has actually, you know, it's putting behaviors aside and personalities aside
Yes.
and all the rest of it, because things can get pretty dirty pretty quickly. Let's be really clear about the difference between process and person, because what countries don't need is to restart every election.
Agreed.
They don't need to throw everything out and restart over and over again. Here in Australia, we have whenever there's an election, we have quite a bit of
Yeah.
machinery of government changes. I don't know if you've ever heard that language before.
Yes.
Machinery
I'm
of
very aware.
yes, they swap policies around and they do this and that and whatever. Even within our environment, there is a level of let's just restart because the political position of that particular minister may be different to the other, and government departments are there to deliver on the minister's election promises. So there is obviously a level of realignment that's required, but you know, there's a careful balance there between, you know, completely throwing everything out and you know, baby out with the bathwater, as opposed to going, well, which part's baby and which part's bathwater, and
Yeah.
you know,
Which
be a little.
parts are working for the American people? Which parts are going to drive America forward? Let's keep those, but we're going to build on them by doing this, this, and this.
Look, absolutely. You know, and maybe the approach is different. And as I said, the maybe something as simple as behaviors could make a really, really big shift in enabling
Yeah.
some of those policies to be able to stick better or work better or be a little bit more humanistic, I guess, is
Yes.
my sense, a little bit more humanistic focus may be required more than
Yeah.
more
Yeah.
than in the past with previous regimes, previous presidents in place. So I think I'd love to be a fly on the wall in that 2-day offside
Oh.
tape. I don't know about you.
Wouldn't that be fun?
It
Wouldn't that be fun?
would be really fun, but I think that there is there's definitely opportunity for two humans to have, you know, some real conversations around what it is and what it
Yeah.
isn't.
Yeah.
And you know, as for I guess legal cases and all that kind of thing, I guess it's really a matter of for them to decide whether that's really
Absolutely.
want to go with and quite relevant for them. I respect that they have a right to do that. In my personal experience, whenever lawyers are involved, the only people who win are the lawyers.
Correct.
To win, and I've got lots of lawyers who are friends. Those that are listening out there, I love you all.
Yes.
But you know, there is. I think there's a certain line that you need to draw in the sand around how far you take things. And I do really hope that those that are out there deciding to take legal actions around things, that they do know where their line is, and that the line doesn't extend them financially to a point where they've no longer got a livelihood or no longer got a life.
Lisa, who would you have to be to facilitate that 2-day offsite? What sort of leader would you have to be? And you would have to be a leader.
Look, it's a really good question, really great question, Tony, because we did see even during, I think, the first debate that the person there to moderate and manage the debate wasn't really given the respect that they needed to be able to do the job that they were hired for. And so I think that the decision around who could help facilitate these kind of conversations would be a really important one. It would need to be someone that's completely impartial, that both individuals respect, and both individuals recognize that they are at least going to provide the right type of support that both of them are going to need. Typically with ego-centered leaders, need to actually get someone with a bigger ego than they do, who they actually idolize and look up to. And it's actually quite hard when you're the president of the United States and you're already up here. It's very, very hard to find someone above you unless you can will out mum or dad, which obviously in this particular case, it's not.
I'm thinking God at the moment.
Yeah, I don't know that God would necessarily want to manage that either.
Yeah, no, he's probably not up for that.
Right. I think it's one of those things too where even recognizing that the 2 days are really important conversation, it's actually that's actually hard enough to recognize the 2 days piece is important without having to try and go, well, not only is the 2 days important, but we also need to get someone completely independent who we both understand and admire and respect.
Which would be tough, wouldn't it? I'm just trying to think of the leaders. Maybe Jacinta Ardern.
Look, I think that Jacinta might do a really, really great job, but I don't know both of those individuals or, you know, maybe perhaps one more so than the other. I don't know it's necessarily the right role for a female, to be really frank with you. I think it'd be great if it was a female, but I do believe that in this particular case, if I was approached by an organisation who needed some support around having these conversations, I would be getting a very well-seasoned, pragmatic, independent male to do the job. And it's not every day that I would go there for that. It shouldn't matter. But I think in this case, unfortunately, it does.
And would you have confidence that that process, if managed correctly, would have a good outcome for the American people?
Look, I am because of the nature of the personalities, Tony, I am I think I would be relatively confident that maybe 60 to 70% of what was discussed and agreed would stick, and I think that the other probably 20 to 30% may not. And the reason why I say that is because for these types of conversations to work really, really well, both individuals actually have to be invested in wanting it to work. If one's there because they want to and one's there because they have to, they're only going to give you what do, not necessarily what they want, what they should, or what, you know, what others would do. I think it's very, very different when both parties are stepping into that environment both wanting to win. And
yes,
it's the difference between winning for the country and winning as an individual. And I think
it's very different.
Very different, and putting aside your personal preferences over the greater good of the countries, something that not everyone can do. You know, going back
to, I was just
going to
say that's a higher level ideal that not everyone has capacity or capability for, because it's a higher level of thinking, it's a higher level of evolved humanity, and I guess they're in.
Yeah, I think that's totally right. I mean,
that's where the problem is.
That's where the problem is. I mean, going back to my little example, in my career path in the past, if both myself and that female leader didn't actually want to be able to move forward together in a way that it was going to work for both of us, it wouldn't have been successful. I know that in our particular case, that there were certain things that I was doing, or even just the nature of the role I had, that was triggering her. She felt it came back to trust. And I know now, and I knew then, that just by purely the design and the nature of the role I had, because the role I had had administrative reporting into her role, but it also had a dotted line up to the CEO and up to the chairman of our board. And so that risk of, I don't know, I'm just imagining that her risk and her concern was that I was able to, in part of my daily job was to actually interface with levels above her without having to check in and have her across what I was doing because of the nature of the role. And it made her very, very uncomfortable and feeling quite unsafe and unnerved. And the more that she kept
trust.
Yeah, lack of trust. And the more that she kept behaving in the way that she thought was acceptable, the more her inner self really knew that she wasn't actually taking her people on the journey with her. So the more she, you know, had this kind of inner knowing, and I do think that she had this inner knowing that she wasn't behaving properly or wasn't behaving appropriately, but she didn't know any different. Know any differently. And because of that, she wasn't able to change. And what was worse was that no one was giving her the feedback until she'd actually had this 360-degree survey. And so, you know, and I kind of stand back from a purely heart-centered, empathetic standpoint and go, this poor person hadn't received feedback for a very, very long time. But I know that the dynamics were playing out in the past organizations, past environments that she was in, because I know that in her previous employment, I was advised by one of the colleagues that was working there that they had a huge party after she left. They were thrilled when she left.
Yeah.
You know, and I find that I just find that really, really hurtful and totally necessary. It's sort of so hypocritical and so avoidant from a behavior standpoint that I think it would have been fairer and better and much, much more, I guess, reasonable for everyone to have the right mechanisms in place, to have the right conversations at the right time and in the right way. And sometimes we, you know, Tony, we've all been confronted with these situations where we have to have these hard conversations.
Yes. And
heart-centered governing leaders feel it really, really strongly. They stay awake at night over these conversations.
Yes.
And, you know, they forget that typically we hire in our own image. So the people around you that you've hired typically are in your image. If you're a heart-centered individual feeling that something's not right, you might actually find when you start these conversations that the individual on the other side of the table actually has been sensing or feeling something hasn't been right either.
Yeah, okay.
Hearts talk to hearts. And so that's kind of how it plays out. However, when heart-centered governing leaders have egocentric leaders above them and around them, take a nice deep breath, it gets tough, right?
Yes.
Tough. And what it ends up coming back to is the heart-centered governing leader being really, really clear on what their own intentions are and where they're coming from, and also being very, very clear around when they're getting triggered and whether they're responding or reacting.
Yeah.
You can hold your lines. You can hold these really nice true lines in a really respectful, constructive way, or you can be triggered. You end up behaving in a mirror effect of what's being thrown at you. You end up
saying,
and which you are, it doesn't sit well.
Which leads me to that whole idea of constructive criticism and how you deliver that. You and I have both been in those rooms where constructive criticism is delivered, and then you end up with a cranky, irritated leader telling you these things and them getting crankier, upset, angry, and you're left going, what? I
What's
don't.
happened? Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and these things can play out in a couple of different ways too, right? So sometimes I've found that our cranky, egocentric leaders are upset about you not doing something that you never knew they wanted you to do. And so that's actually about how you check in before you start something and ask them, do you have any position or perspective around how I'm about to do XYZ? Because I'm about to do it. And being really clear up front around with the leader themselves have to be really clear up front around if you do have expectations, communicate them. But that hindsight smacking, I expected you to do this and this. Well, I didn't know that. Getting really clear and putting some really great communication processes in place so that everyone is being fair to each other and is on the same page around expectations instead of smacking in hindsight. The other thing I find that a lot of egocentric leaders really grapple with is the difference between how much time they spend looking through the windscreen and how much time they spend looking through the rearview mirror. So some egocentric leaders will keep bringing up things in the past and throwing them under the feet of the employees that are actually moving towards whatever it is that needs to happen because they can't over the fact that something happened 5 years ago and they're still not over it. And it's the difference between things happening in the past and us learning from them, as opposed to carrying emotion that you actually bring with you, and not dealing with and processing that emotion at the time that it actually occurs. So there's a level of, dare I say, inner child that comes out sometimes with some of these because they're still starting and they're still hurting from what happened 3 years ago or 5 years ago. And it may not have even been you, Tony. It might have been someone else who was in the job last before you, who used to do XYZ and he or she hasn't communicated their expectations and you haven't been aware of it and you go off and do the best job you can do because that's what you do every morning when you get up and go to work. And all of a sudden you're dealing with this very unhappy leader who really should have been proactively communicating their expectations up front, but haven't got the self-awareness to recognize it. And also, dare I say, has their little inner child out having a tantrum instead of really recognizing that they own part of the problem and that yes, you might expect that and someone with the same skills as you might may or may not come to that conclusion. You can own your bit, you need to own theirs.
And I'm just thinking too, Lisa, some of the things that help in these situations are those documents that clearly define a role within a role description and the reporting and what and when to report, and all that stuff being within the governance framework of a business or a corporation, because that then makes it a bit easier to have some of these conversations because you've got a role description and it says this, this, and this, and there's a clear expectation that you would read and know that that's within your role. And then, if a leader comes to you and says, but you haven't done this, you have a document to go back to and go, well, actually, that's not within my role description, but I'm actually happy to do that. However, what's that going to look like?
Yeah, look, absolutely. And is it part of your current performance agreement? And what doesn't get done when I'm doing this, what doesn't get done? Or can I do this as well as what I've already got capacity wise? Yeah, you're absolutely right, Tony. There's lots of different ways to be able to draw these really nice lines. And I know we've talked quite a bit about defining these lines and these boundaries in a formalized way through, defining policy. Some codes of conduct or codes of ethics provide provide ladders of escalation. So what you actually do when a situation occurs and who you go to and how you validate your concerns and how things actually get escalated up that are really quite effective. Sometimes it can actually just be as simple as putting some really nice agreed protocols in place between two individuals around how they're going to behave when certain dynamics play out. And, you know, going back to my example with that female leader, that's exactly what we did. We couldn't write a policy around how myself and her were going to, you know, how the role was actually going to work. The lines, the defined lines were there, the role descriptions were there. They were all very, very clear. But because of her comfort levels, there were some things that I was really happy to do to enable her to build some trust and also have some transparency that she felt she needed, even though in theory she didn't really need that, but she felt she needed it. There were minor concessions for me if it meant that she actually was feeling better.
She was happier.
And she was happier. The happier she was, the happier everyone around us was. So I was happy to do that because it wasn't really any skin off my, you know, any skin off my back. So
an interesting question just popped into my head. I'm wondering if the President of the United States has a code of conduct to follow.
Oh, great question. Really? I do not know. Maybe your listeners can actually reach out and let you know that, Tony.
I would. If anyone's listening, we want to know if the President of the United States has a code of conduct.
Yeah, and whether the actual White House staff have a code of conduct or a code of ethics. Code of conduct or a code of ethics around the expected behaviours and the requirements. And keeping in mind too, Tony, that custom and practice, undocumented custom and practice is not a code of ethics, code of conduct. So even though the culture is the way we do things around here, it's the unwritten culture. A code of ethics, which provides principles-based or principles around values and behaviours and the ethics of the individuals that are required to align behaviour to, and a code of conduct that has very, very clear, strong lines, compliant requirement lines, is far superior than the expectations that are verbally agreed and perhaps individuals are holding in their heads from, you know, the past presidents that have been here have always done that kind of thing. Not quite the same. Yeah, great question. I wonder too.
I know, that just dropped into my head and I thought, oh gosh. And then in having that conversation, who is the person that oversees that, and who's the person that brings those codes of conduct, you know, who governs that?
Who governs
it? Is it the American people?
That's right. Yeah, who actually holds the president to account? I mean, obviously through the voting process they do. However, it doesn't necessarily help them during the 4 years that they're actually in their roles.
Yes.
So I think it's one of those things where, it's a great question. Whoever does that is probably the same person that should be managing the 2-day offsite, Tony. Because they're the ones
on the golf course.
On the golf course. I hope they've got buggy. I'm personally not a fan of golf, so unless I get to drive a buggy, I don't want to do it. But you know, I like the driving part, and I won't be driving slow either. I think it's one of those things that it's a really, really good question. And keeping in mind too, Tony, that I know we're talking about the context of the US environment and an outgoing organizations have these same challenges all the time.
Absolutely.
When the chairman of the board is not aligning their behavior to the best interests of the organization, who governs and holds them to account? And
what's your experience with that?
Well, it's really interesting. Some organizations are structured to manage it because they have shareholders and they have shareholder meetings.
Yes.
And they have members and they have member meetings. And there's mechanisms that enable, through the board code of conduct, there are mechanisms that enable the board to be able to provide feedback to each other. And if the chair isn't actually operating the way they should be, they're able to actually go to the membership group or to the shareholders and speak up around their concerns and how those concerns are not aligned with the constitution of the organization. If it's the If the chairman of the board is the owner of the business, it's a very different story.
Yeah, I'm just, yeah, what a fascinating concept that is. But still, the shareholders, though, would still be able to highlight what they see as issues around code of conduct, though, wouldn't they?
Look, they would. They'd be giving the shareholders would be giving the board pressure to vote the chairman out, to perhaps
Yes.
push the board. A lot of organizational constitutions also have a section within it that outlines what the desired or what the requirements are around behaviors and what the mechanisms that are available should the behaviors of the individuals not align with the requirements. So, in other words, there will be
Okay.
things there around what do we do when this and that happens. Individuals can actually raise a complaint or a concern in a formalized
Yes.
way. And there are other potential impacts, including the mechanisms for moving members along, sorry, board members along, or the chairman along
Yes.
if they need to. But
Yeah.
as I said, smaller organizations where the chairman of the board is the owner of the business, and they've got family members on the board, and they've got family members
Yeah.
working in the company, it can get pretty ugly pretty quickly. And
Absolutely.
those that are not part of the family, they're the ones that tend to suffer the most because the you're either in the inner circle or you're out of the inner circle, and it's very different when the inner circle is also they're all related parties. They're all conflicted and
Yeah.
they're all related parties. So we talked about related party transactions and conflicts last week.
Exactly. And it kind of, every time I think about this, it's incredibly difficult to manage business and corporation when there's large numbers of family involved in the running of that business. And I know that it works, but it can present some really difficult challenges.
Look, that's absolutely true. And it's especially hard when the individuals are actually sprinkled throughout the whole organization. So,
Yeah.
the lowest level of the organizational hierarchy happens to have dinner every night with the person at the top end of the hierarchy. And what ends up
Yeah.
happening, the conversation typically is XYZ happened, blah, 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 and the person at the top of the organization cuts through and jumps over everyone else to get to
Everyone
the
else to get.
individual to realign whatever's gone on today in their daughters or sons'
Yes.
lives. And it really undermines the positional effectiveness of every leader from the top down when they do that. And when they undermine that authority and individuals realize that behaving that way actually works, every time someone has a concern or an issue, they're going to run straight to the chair or straight to
Straight
the
to the
CEO,
top.
and they're going to jump past all those levels of hierarchy whose job it is to actually,
To
manage the
do.
dynamics. They're not even being allowed to do their job, which is really unfair.
Yeah.
So
And it comes back to that idea of trust and also those lines of communication. So it's not okay for you to go straight to the top. This is the process. This person, then this person, then this person. And there
absolutely.
you go. There's,
You go.
it's about
And
having trust.
having trust, drawing the lines and holding the right lines. So ideally, the
Yeah.
chair of the board, who's the owner of the business, should be advising their daughter or son to raise the matters that they've got concerns about with their leaders. And have
Yeah.
they raised the matter? And has that leader actually done that? And then they need to, the chairman or the owner of the business needs to let it go and let the people who he pays to do that work actually manage these dynamics
Do
and
it.
manage them
Yeah,
appropriately.
yeah.
And so it can be hard sometimes when it's your sibling or your child that is actually got the concern or the issue. And it's
Yeah.
about making sure being really clear about which hat you're wearing. One of the things that we've actually found that works really, really well, Tony, in those kind of dynamics is putting together a family council. A family council.
Oh, okay.
If you actually set up family council meetings instead of, I mean, obviously they still need board meetings. Typically,
Yeah.
family members all have an opinion. I don't know about your family. I've got a European family, Tony, and
Yes.
my
Strong
family
opinions.
very, very strong opinions, and they're not very backwards in coming forwards. In fact, I don't know of any of my I don't, can't think of anything that any of my family members have gone, you know what, the other day I was thinking of saying something and I didn't say it. That never happened. But I, what I find is that in council, if we set up family council meetings, individuals who actually don't have decision-making powers can actually voice their concerns and their issues. And someone independent, we actually do this. We moderate and mediate the family council conversations in a very, very structured way. And at the same time, providing, I guess, some mentoring and training for all the family members who are involved in this business to understand what their role is and where they need to play professionally and how to turn those, you know, which hat to put on personally and professionally to make sure that they're actually engaging in the right way. And, you know, their insights are important, but there are mechanisms and making sure those right mechanisms are in place to be able to support them in the way they need it. And it's...
So, Lisa, part of what the Governance Collective does is help facilitate those difficult conversations,
Yes, we do. And the way we do that is actually several fold, Tony, because as soon as a difficult conversation like that comes up, the first thing we look for is what governing documents and governing processes are in place that or not in place that actually got us here to where we are right now. Sometimes those conversations are things like, why doesn't your son, daughter, brother, sister, wife, partner have a performance agreement around what the expected performance is? Because, you know, everyone else across the business does and you've got haves and have-nots. And so it may be helping with those kinds of mechanisms first before we get to the point where we say, okay, this is your lane, this is your lane. Every time you do this, you're going in their lane. It's not your lane. Is your lane the right lane? Why do you care what they're doing anyway? You know, all that kind of really, really clear about where everyone needs to play. And, we definitely can help them with those conversations if they need it. We're actually doing quite a lot of that right now via Zoom, Tony. So for those that are in the US and thinking, oh, how do I find someone local? Yes, you can definitely do that. But we're also available to facilitate conversations like that via Zoom. And we do find that the Zoom mechanism is actually a kind of nice mechanism to be able to do it, because the mood in the room gets diffused a little bit. There isn't as much aggression and anger when individuals actually have to see themselves on a camera and they're actually behaving that way. There's something that kind of, I guess, distills through that process, which also is quite effective.
And Zoom has capacity for quite large gatherings of people in that format, and the ability to manage who's speaking and who's muted. And actually, I'm just thinking that that would be quite a nice way to have some of those difficult conversations.
It is. And you know what else Zoom does? I sound like I'm plugging Zoom. I don't get money for plugging Zoom, I promise you. But you know, Zoom actually does have a voting facility. And so one of the things that I've been finding...
Does it?
Does. I've been finding it really, really useful to actually do polls and vote during Zoom we use it a lot for when we do risk assessments. So when people are actually online, we actually vote on the likelihood and consequence of risks. But you can actually use that voting and polling mechanism in the same way. And the beautiful thing about it, Tony, is that every individual gets the opportunity to click and have their vote. So even if you can't speak over Uncle Marcus or whoever it is that, you know, likes to hear the sound of his voice while he's speaking, whoever it is that's got that ego kind of approach, every individual in that room, within the Zoom room, gets to have a vote, even if they don't even get to put a word in. So it's quite a nice...
That's really cool. I didn't know that Zoom did that.
It does, yeah, it does.
Fantastic. Well, Lisa, on that note... thank you for going with me in the bigger American politics conversation and behaviour management. Wonderful to talk to you again today. Thank you, everyone who's listening. You've joined Lisa and I today talking about heart-centred leaders and how they manage conflict and have those hard conversations. For a replay of this show, just jump on to Radio Tony and you will find the links to the replays of the live show. And we will be back next week with more conversations around heart-centred leaders. Thank you so much, Lisa. And that's our lot for this week. Bye for now.